Now we saw in the previous chapter methods for removal of noise and artifacts. Now they are indeed methods for image enhancement too, in the sense the quality of the image is enhanced or improved by reducing the noise. But here in this chapter, image enhancement, we will look at specific methods to manipulate images, not to remove noise or artifacts present in them, but to improve certain intrinsic qualities or certain quality-related attributes of the image. So in practice, there could be several factors that lead to images with less than the desired level of contrast or visibility of detail or quality in some sense of that word, depending upon the application. In several situations, you may not know the exact cause of loss of quality, and you may have to go ahead and manipulate the given image or the observed image to make it look better in some manner without knowing what went wrong during its acquisition. So what we are doing here is attempt to improve or enhance the quality of the image on hand using several techniques that are available or are known in the literature in what is said to be an ad hoc manner. That means you are just applying a certain method and you will get a result. There is no guarantee or no expectation that that would be the best result you could possibly get, and the method is not tailored to the specific image or degradation that that image has experienced. So you simply try a few methods and see which method will give you an acceptable result, and then you accept that result. And that is what is meant by ad hoc processing. Something to handle a specific situation to yield a result that could serve you better than the original image. And in some applications, that may be enough. A non-specific improvement in the general appearance of the given image when processed may be adequate, and one may be happy with that. Now, on the other hand, in another chapter where I have described methods for image restoration, you need specific models of degradation of the image that you observed or recorded. You have to know what exactly went wrong, and then you attempt to invert it, and you attempt to estimate the original image that you attempted to capture. Much like what we did in the previous chapter on removal of artifacts such as noise, the Wiener filter is optimal in the sense it attempts to estimate the original. In image enhancement, we don't do that. It's like the 3x3 mean or median filter, where you try different techniques and then see which one gives you an acceptable result. So in the previous chapter, we did see methods for estimation of the original image, which could be termed as image restoration techniques. In this chapter, we will see a few methods where we will do various things to a given image to make it look better according to some criteria. There are a few biomedical imaging situations where enhancement of some features would be desirable, such as microcalcifications and mammograms. Now, there could be some specific causes that cause the specific aspects of the image acquisition procedure that lead to microcalcifications being blurred or not appearing at their best in the image. But we will not look into those. We will simply say the aim to process is to make the calcifications look sharper or more visible with higher contrast. Lung nodules in chest X-ray images, they may not be visible to the desired level, and if you can enhance their appearance, that would be good. The vascular structure of the brain, you don't have a model for that. You simply try to extract it from the image by applying a technique. Hairline fractures in ribs, which may be hard to visualize. So in these cases, and there are many, many others, you would like to improve their appearance in the image to some extent. Some features could be difficult to see in the given image due to their small size, subtlety, and small differences in characteristics with reference to the surrounding areas or low contrast, and all of these apply to, for example, calcifications or hairline fractures in ribs or in bone in general. If it is a very thin crack, it may be hard to see. Others could be rendered not visible due to the superimposition of other structures in the image, such as lung nodules if superimposed by ribs or by the heart or by other tissues that mask their appearance. So what is desired is enhancement of contrast or of edges or detail visibility, but without causing any distortion or artifact. Now that is difficult. We know in noise filtering that certain filters cause certain types of distortion of the edge or of the shape. When you apply some enhancement methods, such artifacts could arise in the result also. And we will see some of them. But what is desired is enhancement of contrast or edges or visibility of that particular detail of interest without causing any distortion or artifact, which may not always be easily achieved. So let's start with some very simple techniques. We saw how simple addition of multiple frames and averaging could help in reducing noise. So let's look at another simple operation, which is subtraction. We have seen more complicated operations such as convolution and transforms and so on, but sometimes just addition and subtraction of images can help. In angiography, as I mentioned earlier, an X-ray contrast agent is injected so as to increase the density or the X-ray attenuation coefficient of the blood within a certain organ of interest. A number of images are taken, X-ray images are taken, as the contrast agent spreads through this arterial network of the heart or of the brain and so on, typically heart and the brain. Before the agent is injected and after the agent has stabilized within the body, but before the contrast agent gets spread throughout the body and then dissipated. So there is a finite time interval in which you have to capture these images, and you need one before you inject the contrast medium for reference and subtraction. So the image taken before the injection is called a mask or reference image of the body. Let's see, if the noise gets worse, we'll close the window. And then the images that you acquire during the injection process or during the time that the contrast medium is passing through the system, those are called live images, and then you subtract them. The procedure is very simple. If you want to write an equation, it is fmn equal to f1 minus f2, but you could put some weights, alpha and beta, in case there is some difference in the overall appearance of the image or some normalization factor is required. The major limitations of this technique arise due to artifacts due to movement of the patient. So if during the process of injection of the contrast medium or in the period between the time of injection or between the time the mask image was taken and the time the next live image is taken, if there is some movement of the whole body of the patient, or if there is some movement within the body that the patient cannot control, then there will be artifacts. There is no registration of the corresponding details between the two images, and that will lead to artifacts due to relative movement or motion. And then a limitation in practice or a potential danger is allergic reaction of the patient to the contrast agent, which is a matter of concern, and also infection. So here are examples from Mehring and others from, I believe they're from the Netherlands. I think they're from Utrecht in the Netherlands. A here, the top left image, is the mask image, and B is the live image, is one of the live images. And in between, the contrast medium has been injected and it has gone through the arterial network of the brain. But it is still difficult to see in this image the arterial structure. You can see that there is some enhancement. In the original mask image, you cannot see the arteries at all. In the live image, you can see the arteries here. There is increased density of the network, arterial network, due to the blood carrying the contrast agent. So the attenuation coefficient has increased slightly. But still, because of the superposition of the other parts of the brain and the skull and the whole head, you cannot see these details of the artery structure readily in this live image. But if you subtract the two, you get this image C. In this image, you can see the artery structure quite well, but you see some ghost images or artifacts also here due to some movement between the two instances of time, between the mask and the live image. Some of this movement is related to the pulsatile movement of blood. The patient's head quite likely would have been held rigid and fixed during the imaging process. Still, they got this artifact. The researchers developed some registration techniques and correction techniques to account for this, and part D here is an improved image of the arterial network of the brain, where you can see the contrast is better and the rippling effect is not present here. So they were able to develop some registration techniques, which I have not described in the book, but all I want to show here is that B minus A gives you this image C, where you can see the blood vessel network much better than in either image A or B, and some post-processing may be required or could be used to improve the quality of that difference to prevent motion artifact or to correct, I shouldn't say prevent, to correct for motion artifact. Okay. And such imaging techniques are also used for the heart, and that could also be done live, not live, but as a video to see the movement of the heart during the normal motion or contraction cycle. There is another technique based on subtraction that is very interesting called dual energy and energy subtraction X-ray imaging. Now, dual energy and energy subtraction, there are two different techniques. Different materials have varying energy-dependent X-ray attenuation coefficients, depending upon their density and other physical characteristics. Now, X-ray measurements are images obtained at multiple energy levels of the X-ray beam, that is photon energy, or the KEV that is used in the X-ray tube, could be combined to derive information about the specific material or the elements in the material or the compounds. Weighted combinations of multiple energy images may be used to display soft tissue and hard tissue in the human body separately. But the disadvantage of dual energy or multi-energy technique or energy selective imaging technique is that you have to expose the patient repeatedly to different levels of X-ray energy. So there is increased X-ray dose or exposure to the patient. So that is a disadvantage in the imaging of patients or people. There could also be motion artifacts between the two imaging instants, as we saw in the case of subtraction angiography of the brain. Even if the head is held fixed, there could be movement within the head that will cause the artifacts. So registration is a problem with such images, where you have to acquire multiple images, and here you have to obtain multiple images at different kilovoltage or KEV energy of the X-ray beam used. To overcome that, researchers at the University of Chicago, McMahon and others, developed what they called energy subtraction imaging using dual plate computed radiography. Here, there are two plates that are used to detect the X-ray image, and they're separated by a copper filter. So earlier I said copper is also used for filtering X-rays, and I also said wood and corrected that. And later I mentioned that the typical filters used in X-ray tubes are tungsten and molybdenum, but here they use copper filter, but this is within the detector, as part of the detector after the X-rays are passed to the patient. So a copper sheet is put between two detectors, and these are CR, so they are charge plate detectors. The first plate gets the full spectrum X-ray image after the X-rays have passed to the patient. So instead of one film, they have one detector here, and that detector gets the X-rays after passage through the body, and the X-rays used are from a standard clinical X-ray tube. So depending upon the setting used, 110 kV or 70, 80 kV, there'll be a certain bandwidth. And that bandwidth of X-rays, after going through the patient, will hit the first plate. So that is called the full spectrum X-ray image. And then there's a copper plate after that, and the copper plate passes only high energy X-ray components. The softer X-rays are stopped. And depending upon the thickness of the copper, that could be, let's say, up to 50, 60 kV. I don't remember what the cutoff of that is. So what will be passed after that will be the higher energy part of the X-ray spectrum. And the higher energy spectrum would have been attenuated by higher density parts of the body, such as bones and calcium-containing structures. They would have absorbed the low-energy X-ray components. So the low-energy components would not have information about them, whereas high-energy components would have passed through the low-density tissues with little attenuation. So the attenuation of the high-energy and the low-energy parts of the same X-ray spectrum would be different for different parts of the body, depending upon their density. So the second plate, after the copper filter, will have information related to the denser tissues that would relate to bones and calcium-containing structures. So that is the whole story behind this detector. So the two plates capture two views, but they are derived from the same X-ray beam, one shot through the patient. So there is no need to register because it is one exposure of the patient. And there is no movement artifact or any such thing between the two images because they are from the same image. Just before the detector plate, they would contain the same information. And if you had just put one film, it would have been just one image. So the patient is not subjected to two different exposures. So the patient gains in terms of limited X-ray exposure. A weighted subtraction of the two images will then provide various results. They did not give details about what the weights are. Apparently, that is guarded. But the net result is interesting. So here is the full spectrum chest image of a patient. So this is the standard X-ray. The first plate in this detector gives you a standard X-ray image, which is that. Now, after this beam has passed through the copper plate, you get a different image. And that image is somehow combined through a subtraction with the first image. And depending upon what you do, you get different results in the second plate. Well, it's not exactly the second plate, but the second plate image is somehow combined with the first image to derive multiple outputs. And these are two results. In the first part, you have the bone detail image. It's as though you have pulled the bones out from the previous image. And here you have the soft tissue image without the bones. So these are derived from two images, one including the full spectrum image, and the other, which is not shown. I couldn't get that. So in this publication, the bone detail image is one and the soft tissue is another, derived from the two images acquired using two plates separated by a copper filter. Here, in this image, you see a lung nodule that is more obvious here than in the original image. But of course, once you see it here, if you go back to the full spectrum image, it is visible there. But it is so small, it is easy to miss in the original. Whereas here, it is enhanced, and that doesn't appear in the soft tissue detail image. And of course, the bones don't appear here. And you can see the soft tissue detail better here in part B of this image than in the original image due to the superposition of the ribs here it is hard to visualize all the details of the soft tissue, whereas here they are more apparent. So in this manner, it is possible to manipulate the information that you get in one imaging session using the same X-ray beam into multiple images. It is also possible to perform temporal subtraction. Time-lapse subtraction of images is useful in detecting changes. Now, in a way, subtraction angiography is time-lapse imaging or temporal subtraction, because you take one image and then there is a change that is created by injecting the contrast medium. Then you take the second image and subtract, and you're asking, what is the difference between the two? The difference between the two in angiography is the contrast medium in the blood vessels. Now, you could also do this for other images without injecting anything. You take an image of a person at one instant, and a year later you take an image of that same organ and try to estimate the difference between the two. The problem is, in the case of chest X-ray imaging, there could be some changes in the size of the patient, gaining weight or losing fat or gaining more fat. There could be some differences in the positioning of the patient and the breathing involved. Typically, you are asked to take a deep breath and stop breathing when the X-ray image is taken. But depending upon how deep a breath you take, the shape of your chest could be a little different between two imaging instants. Whether they are minutes apart or years apart, it doesn't matter. There will be changes in the size, shape, position, orientation of the object. Now, if you can take care of those changes that are regular, normal changes, and subtract in such a manner with some registration technique, you should ideally see only the pathological changes that might have occurred. The normal anatomic structures are expected to be suppressed if you can handle this properly, and that's a big if. The registration of images is crucial in temporal subtraction, and misregistration could lead to serious artifacts, as we saw even in the digital subtraction imaging of the brain, the arterial structure of the brain. There are geometric transformation techniques available that help in registering images taken of the same patient, same part of the body, over a fairly lengthy period of time. But there is limited success there. What you need to detect are important landmark features that are not expected to have changed. And then if you can use these landmark features as a reference and register the images and then do some subtraction, you may be able to detect the true change that has occurred between the two instances of time. Now, some researchers have studied registration of mammograms. In a mammogram with for example, the mediolateral oblique view, you could use the pectoral muscle, the chest wall, as a reference. You could use the nipple as the reference, and these are commonly used. But then there is no guarantee that the projection you got of the breast, which also involves compression of the breast, is the same as what you got a year ago. It's nearly impossible to make that assumption or to say that these are properly registered, even using the pectoral muscle of the same patient in the same image or using the nipple. In 3D images, CT images, you may have better landmarks. And if you can orient the data properly using some landmarks in 3D that you know or can say with some confidence have not changed much in the interval between the two images, then in 3D CT images or MR images, you may be able to achieve better registration. But in planar projection images, where you have the integration of the entire chest onto a sheet of film or the mammogram with compression of the breast, these techniques would have severe limitations. Okay, so let us look at a few transforms for manipulation of images. So let's start with simple grayscale thresholding. When you have an image and you know the gray level characteristics, and the gray level could be density or Hounsfield units or intensity or any other property that the values in the image represent. In some cases, they are quantitative measures such as Hounsfield units in a computed tomography image. Otherwise, they could be simply qualitative measures of light reflected from the object, in which case you don't have any physical units or calibration. If you know the values of interest or the values associated with an object of interest, then you could threshold, you could apply a threshold and say GMN, the output, is zero if FMN, the input image, is less than some limit L1 on the value and is equal to 255 if it is greater than L1, and you get a binary image. We could say binary, 0 and 255, but strictly speaking, we should say bi-level, because there are two levels that are distinct and there are only two levels in the output. But you could also represent it as a binary image, 0, 1, black, white. So binary and bi-level could be used interchangeably here. So what it means here is that pixels less than L1 were considered to be noise or artifact or details that you do not care about. So you simply reject them, and pixels greater than L1 are considered to be objects of interest. And then what you get is a binary representation, yes or no. Is this pixel belonging to the object of interest or not? But if you want, you can also retain the gray level of the original image. Below L1, you set all values to 0 and throw them out. And above L1, you retain the original value in the image, FMN. Then you will see the details within the object with gray level or value greater than L1, up to the maximum in the image. So this will display features of interest, including their internal gray level variations. Now here is an example. This is a CT image, one cross section of a patient with a type of cancer known as neuroblastoma, which is a pediatric cancer. The tumor is fairly big in this section. This is the liver, the spinal column, some ribs. That is the tumor. And let me read here. The Hounsfield unit values in the range minus 200 to 400 have been linearly mapped to the range 0 to 255. So we chose the range minus 200, which is much lower than the limit of fat, and plus 400, which goes a little higher than the calcifications you will see in the tumor, but a little less than hard bone. Hard bone could be more than 400. That's the result here. Now in part B, we applied a threshold of 200 Hounsfield units. So here, all values less than 200 Hounsfield units have been set to 0, and all values above 200 Hounsfield units are white, maximum of 255 in the display. So you see the bones, the ribs, the spinal column, and parts of the tumor that are calcified. So this is high density calcified tissue, and then everything else is removed. So all soft tissue has been removed. One would have expected only the bones to have come out in this image, but because parts of the tumor have been calcified, we see those parts that have a Hounsfield unit of more than 200 value. Now part C here, you have values about 200 Hounsfield units, but they appear at the original gray level, and variations about 200 Hounsfield units have been maintained from 200 to 400 Hounsfield units. So here you see the bone and the calcified tissue and the spinal column and the examination table, the CT table, all with their original values intact. If there is any value inside that is less than 200, it would have been set to black. And all soft tissue has been removed. And what's the last one? 0 to 400. So here we took values only above 0 and up to 400 and mapped it to the output display range of 0 to 255. So from the same data, the same original slice, we get different views to analyze the detail present in the image according to our interest as to what we want to display.